public enemy number one in the United States is drug abuse. In order to fight and defeat this enemy, it is necessary to wage a new all-out offensive.
The war on drugs.
A war on drugs. 40 years later, it's a war we're still losing.
The war on drugs is a huge failure with devastating unintended consequences.
Modern society's relationship with drugs is full of contradictions. Pop culture portrays the drugs industry as a glamorous world. In films like Scarface and in TV shows like Narcos and Breaking Bad, it's almost enticing even. But that portrayal stays on the screen. In real life and in the corridors of policymaking, drugs and those that supply them consistently have a bad name. But is it really all that black and white? Welcome. You're listening to the State of Power podcast from the Transnational Institute, TNI. My name is Sean Macheza, and today we're asking, if the war on drugs has failed, what alternatives are there? Since 1971, the government of the United States has spearheaded what's come to be known as the global war on drugs. And although the focus was on stemming the flow of drugs into the United States, the impact of the policy has been indeed global. Much effort has gone into stopping the supply of drugs at the source. And of the many ways that governments have tried to stop the supply, one is particularly cruel: the fumigation of illicit crops. Using chemicals such as glyphosate, a broad-spectrum systemic herbicide that kills everything it touches, entire stretches of land have been rendered unproductive with the intention of stopping the production of coca in, for instance, Colombia. This was a cause for concern not only for Colombian farmers, but for others across the border in Ecuador. The main victims of such initiatives are poor farmers who are barely getting by in the first place. For an example, here's Nangyon, a member of the Myanmar Opium Farmers Forum. And here she's talking about the impacts of the drug policy in Myanmar.
My name is Nangyon. I have five children. Opium farming is the main source of income to raise my family. Shan is a mountainous and high elevation region. We cannot grow other crops. So opium is the main crop for us to solve livelihood, health and education problems. There was fighting between the Myanmar army and ethnic armed organizations. When we ran away from fighting, we could not bring our rice, maize and animals. Opium is compact, easy to carry, and we can exchange it for money wherever we go. We also use opium in cultural rituals and as traditional medicine to cure many illnesses, such as dysentery, chronic pain, and high fever. Villagers came back to their villages when the fighting reduced and they had nothing left to help them restart their livelihood activities. It was too difficult for villagers to survive, so they decided to grow opium for quick income to better their livelihoods. We have many difficulties in growing opium. Many armed organizations demand money from us, and we have to pay them. In some years, government carried out forced eradication and destroyed all our opium fields. We lost all our investment and effort. As an opium farmer, I want to request the government not to criminalize opium farmers. Don't eradicate our fields until we can find sustainable and viable alternative livelihoods. Provide effective and efficient public services and support for alternative development for us. Recognize the cultural use and traditional medicine value of opium. Give us the opportunity to have a meaningful participation in the development of drug control policy.
So instead of stemming the flow, the war on drugs has only managed to cause untold suffering to millions of people across the world. Many of them, like Nanyong, are poor farmers whose lives are far removed from the glamour of pop culture. Most are simply trying to make a living and have no idea where their produce ends up. Victims of the war on drugs have been most visible as immigrants streaming to the southern border of the United States recently. But the spread of victims spans the globe. From the Golden Crescent of Afghanistan to the coca fields of Colombia and all the way to the Golden Triangle in Southeast Asia, farmers of illicit drugs face pressures from multiple fronts. The voice of communities involved in illicit cultivation has long been excluded from national and international policymaking platforms. However, farmers involved in the illicit cultivation of coca, cannabis, and opium poppy have gained more space to provide input to drug policy discussions at the United Nations level, largely thanks to the work of social movements such as the Myanmar Opium Farmers Forum and COCAM in Colombia, and many more organizations at the grassroots level. I spoke to Martin Yelsma, the director of TNI's Drug and Democracy Program, and I asked him to give me a broad overview of the work that TNI has been doing in supporting these movements and their input into efforts to change the international drug policy landscape. TNI was already working with peasant farmers in Latin America. I started by asking Martin what gave him the courage to attempt what seems like a very difficult and sensitive process.
Yeah, the drugs issue in general is still controversial for many people. Of course, we did talk quite a lot at the time also with the more official farmers organizations, whether they would be willing to take up the defense of the human rights, basically, of those caught up in the illicit farming. And they were all, for understandable reasons, that they were scared to bring it onto their agenda. They were, of course, already involved in quite difficult fights over other agricultural issues. And there was clear resistance to bring in an even more controversial topic that would also complicate their difficult relationship with government agencies to negotiate. And if they would start defending people who were doing something illegal, they thought it would have negative consequences for their other issues and their other negotiations. The difficulty was also that farmers, they can't say organize themselves as illegal farmers.
Illegal farmers, yeah.
When we started in Colombia, there didn't exist anything like a coca farmers movement or. No, it did exist in Bolivia and Peru, because there part of the market is legal because of the thousands of years of history of indigenous uses, just the chewing of coca leaf, something we've also always defended. It's also been an element in our work. So we worked quite a lot with those farmers' organizations, the coca farmers, who had a strong union base. And then we also started to talk with farmers in other countries, in Myanmar, which is a very repressive environment. Farmers were very hesitant to basically come out openly with their name, that they were involved in opium poppy cultivation, because it involves risks. But we did manage to start a process of the Myanmar Opium Farmers Forum, which now does exist, and we facilitated the first series of meetings. And they now start to have their own dynamic. But it is a unique process. Also, because what we also do quite a lot is to organize informal policy dialogues, always behind closed doors, Chatham House rule, to bring together people from governments and civil society, etc. And so in this case of Myanmar, we also did manage to get representatives of the Opium Farmers Forum into meetings where they could discuss directly with government agencies.
Would
about
they have,
policies,
assurances for their safety?
Yes, and that was of course not easy, and that required careful trust building on both sides, because of course, I remember one moment when we came with a whole bus full of opium farmers, and we drove into Naypyidaw, the new capital. A place where most of them had never ever been, and there was a meeting with the government officials, and half of them were in uniform. So the moment
so you've got the farmers on one side and the government officials in their uniforms, military.
Yes.
Possibly looking to arrest these guys also.
Yeah, I mean, of course, their normal reaction if they see a uniform is to run away. they only meet them in a situation of repression and eradication of their fields and being arrested. So you could literally see the goose skin when they drove and walked into that building. And seeing all those uniforms and in this very official building where they have never ever been, and then afterwards, the relief and one of them said it was as if earth and heaven met. They had never thought it would be possible to have that direct conversation, be in the same room, and not being arrested, and feel free to, of course, not all of them felt very fully confident, but many did openly talk about what their involvement in Poppy and why, the reasons why they did it, their dependence on it, their willingness to find other possible alternative legal livelihoods, but
that is really about having a livelihood, not wanting to be a criminal. Basically.
Exactly. Yeah. Yes. Yeah.
Besides facilitating dialogue between government officials and farmers of illicit substances, TNI also provides policy advice at the highest level of policymaking.
It is indeed a quite unique feature for TNI, and also very specifically for the drugs program. And I think that there are very few other organizations that really span the whole spectrum from the grassroots and trust with the communities, and also trust with some of the highest policy-making levels. Those worlds are so far apart, and it often feels in those conference halls in Vienna that sort of a virtual reality, and to be able to bridge those worlds, I think is something very powerful. Mm-hmm. We've become quite specialized in this particular area, from all the legal details of the treaties to the very rough realities in the rural communities or in prisons. And so we do span the whole spectrum, and that I think does earn respect. Yeah.
TNI has thus been closely involved in some areas with providing legal advice.
In the program, we have always done also quite a lot of legal work, also at the national level. helping to develop drug law reform proposals, in terms of decriminalization for users, but also lower sentences for small-level traders, etc. So we have quite a lot of legal expertise.
The process towards more progressive drug laws is more complicated than simply changing the laws in the different countries. Martin explains some of the complications.
One of the principles of the program is also that milder plant substances can better be legally regulated than criminally prosecuted. It hasn't worked, and it has many advantages. So several of the reforms that we are proposing run into this wall that countries say, well, maybe we would have wanted to do it, but we can't because we are under international obligation to criminalize, etc. So then we started to talk about what are the possibilities to change that international legal framework, and that is quite a difficult thing to do.
Difficult as it is, some countries are considering changing their internal drug policy, and TNI has been providing advice and research. But this still raises various legal considerations.
It is also another feature of TNI, I think, that in a basic principle is that international law is something to be very careful about. It is, those instruments are designed to protect the weaker. So if you start to just violate one treaty, it undermines respect.
It's a slippery slope.
Undermines respect for international law. Yeah. It's more difficult to then point at other countries who are violating another treaty. Yeah. So, we wanted to have a respectful attitude, even towards very bad treaties in this case. Mm-hmm. So we prefer to have a legally sound procedure to start opening the discussion about these treaties and to, with the governments who are now breaking out from it, basically over the cannabis issue, to work out a proposal how they can do that with respect for international law.
No matter how respectful these countries are, there's still bound to be some sort of pushback.
At the moment, the situation around drug policy is so polarized at the international level that there are many countries who do not want to know anything about softening the war on drugs or decriminalizing or even legalizing. So it is just politically unthinkable to get any amendment approved, because that requires more or less the approval of everybody.
Yeah.
So then we have actively supported countries like Uruguay, which was the first country to legally regulate the whole cannabis market, including for non-medical purposes. Mm-hmm. But again, and several other countries are interested to go in that direction. With Jamaica, we've been talking a lot. And now with Canada. Canada recently also decided to do that. But again, this issue came up that they are doing something which is not allowed under the treaties.
And this is how TNI came up with a mechanism that provides countries with a loophole. It's a little complicated, so I'll let Martin explain.
Yeah, the inter-se mechanism is indeed something that we have been working on for quite a few years by now. So an inter-se modification or inter-se agreement. An inter-se is Latin, and it basically means amongst themselves. A group of countries, or two or more countries, are under certain conditions, but they can come to an agreement among themselves alone, to derogate from certain obligations of a treaty. So they can just sign an agreement that, in this case, for example, the cannabis-specific provisions of the treaties, for them, no longer apply. Then they have to promise, you know, that towards the other parties of the big treaty, that they will do everything they can to still respect the jurisdiction of the others who want to keep the treaty as it is. So make sure that they organize trade among themselves in such a way that it doesn't easily leak towards countries that wants to keep it prohibited. But it is an option in international law that a group of countries basically change the rules of a big treaty, but only among themselves alone. Yeah. And that's where we are now actually starting the process of practical terms, to start thinking through what would such an inter-se agreement on cannabis, for example, or on coca, what would it look like, what needs to be in there, and we are working now towards a first meeting of countries that might be interested to actually sign such a agreement. And there is a lot of worry, especially in the UN drug control organs, but also amongst the most fervent prohibitionist states, about this proposal. Well, they know that we are working on it, and they see it, and it's they're right.
In their minds, the international treaties, they worked so hard to keep.
Yes, it is a bit of a bomb under the consensus framework. And the fear is also that they realize that it's very difficult for them to stop it. Because it is something that it's a group of countries just can do by themselves.
Clear. It's like you guys can keep your laws and your rules. We will respect your decision to do that. But amongst ourselves, we're going to suspend this and that rule. And only amongst ourselves, we won't try to trade with you with this stuff.
Yeah.
That was Martin Jelsma, director of TNI's Drugs and Democracy Program, sharing some thoughts about what an alternative, human rights-focused international drugs regime would look like. You're listening to the State of Power podcast from the Transnational Institute. TNI is an international research and advocacy institute committed to building a just, democratic, and sustainable planet. For more than four decades, we've supported the major social movements of the day, providing them with research, ideas, as well as logistical support. We're based in Amsterdam, and we believe there are alternatives to the world as it currently exists. We hope you believe this too. Thank you so much for listening this far. TNI's material is all free, but we would greatly appreciate your help to keep doing the work we do. If you'd like to find out more about TNI's work, please look us up at www.tni.org/support us. And find us on social media at TN Institute on Twitter and Transnational Institute on Instagram and Facebook. And finally, August 31 is International Overdose Awareness Day. Please take a moment to reflect on what role you can play in supporting and not punishing those who need our help the most. Thank you, and see you next time.